We're hearing about a massive number of cases in the US, and the infection rate has spiked dramatically in many states after they began to wind back those coronavirus restrictions. According to Johns Hopkins University, the death toll in the country is now over 126,000, with more than 2.5 million confirmed cases. So what's the next step? Nina Harawa is a professor at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA in Los Angeles. We spoke a short time ago.
Well, we're seeing cases throughout the U.S. I mean, they seem to be going up in many different parts of the country, particularly in the South and the Southwest, where I'm located in California. So, but overall, if you look at the data, there's actually 36 different states that have seen a rise in cases. And then there's a number of states that are holding steady and just two states that are seeing a drop in cases. So it's really not one place that's given rise to it, but certainly a particular concern in places in the Southwest and the Southern U.S.
What sort of areas in particular? Obviously, it's very widespread, but are there certain hotspots at the moment that have the attention of people such as yourself?
Yeah, we're particularly concerned about what's going on in Florida. I live in California, but we're continuing to see troubling trends here. Texas, Arizona, Mississippi, and South Carolina, if you look at not just numbers of cases, but rates of new cases, you also see troubling trends there. Georgia as well.
In your view, does the United States have the appropriate strategy in place to deal with the outbreak at the moment?
No, we don't, because we don't have a comprehensive enough strategy that's consistent across locations. And we don't have the level of political will or resources really that have been invested into things like adequate coverage of testing, contact tracing, and really putting in place measures, protective measures, like requiring face coverings and requiring social distancing within businesses consistently. We're far from that in terms of the country as a whole.
So you mentioned there that the southern parts of the United States are of particular concern. Is that lack of a consistency in the United States strategy here partly to blame for that?
Yes, there's been a certain level of lack of federal leadership together with inconsistent messaging at the federal level. You know, I think one of the clear signs of this has been the messaging around masks. And, you know, we have a president who sort of recommends them, but still doesn't wear them himself. And we have more and more data showing that masks are really effective for preventing infection. But it's now become this kind of cultural war type, either mandate or expectation, and people feeling that it becomes an issue of personal rights, et cetera, and almost like a party affiliation, whether or not you want to wear masks or feel like they should be required.
One of your specialty areas is health disparity. Now, can you tell me about the spread of COVID-19 in that context, in terms of the way it has spread so far along perhaps wealth and race lines?
I mean, one of the things that's really interesting is that when COVID started out, it tended to affect people who had means. They were people who were more likely to have traveled, people more likely to be in contact with people in wealth and means because they were able to travel. But it very quickly spread from those populations into lower income populations and is taking the greatest toll in terms of actual health impacts and mortality on Black, Latino, and Indigenous populations, Native American populations in the U.S. And really, for those of us who care and really study those issues, it wasn't surprising. We have a society in which it's very easy to sort of, for diseases and other conditions, just sort of find a way to flourish in those populations because of lack of sufficient access to medical care for a condition like COVID. So there's one is the risk of becoming infected. And so you have groups of people who are more likely to become infected because of the types of jobs they have, their ability to isolate or distance. And then you also have individuals who are more prone to have negative outcomes of infection because they're more likely to have diabetes or to have a high body mass index or to have hypertension. And, you know, all of those conditions are conditions that are more common in populations that experience higher levels of stress and discrimination and higher levels of poverty.
Now, you're based in Los Angeles, and that's seen both big COVID-19 numbers, tens of thousands of cases, and then recently as well, some of the largest Black Lives Matter protests as well. What's the feeling like in the city at the moment?
It feels like like there's definitely been a shift within the last weekend, the last week or two. It feels like things have calmed down. The protests have been, there's been less property damage or that sort of activity with the protests. People have still been active, but I think people are now looking to other ways that you can really make change. Being in the street is one way, but a lot of change happens within boardrooms and within legislative offices, et cetera. And so I think that is becoming more of the focus. In terms of whether or not people are protecting themselves and social distancing, what I observe is I see a lot more use of face coverings and social distancing in people of color communities than I do in white communities. And I've seen some really troubling examples of pushback. There's a taco stand, I think that's in the Valley today, that put out on Twitter that they had to close two of their locations because customers were literally throwing drinks in their faces and calling staff names when they asked them to wear masks and even offered them masks so that they could get service. So it's very interesting. In more affluent areas, I see less of that social distancing measure in white and more affluent areas of Los Angeles.
Professor Naina Harawa from UCLA speaking to me there from Los Angeles.